again, for all intents and purposes, done for the Utah Jazz. Maybe they're still going to make a play for Dwayne Wade. I don't know. I don't think so. Our next guest might. He's our Jazz insider from the Deseret News. Gets a pseudo day off today, though there's never really a day off. No basketball games downtown. Last day of the Jazz Summer League will be coming up tomorrow. Jody Geddes joins us right now on the Bill Riley Show. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Bill.
So Jazz fans have turned their opinion around just a little bit. I don't think anybody saw Joe Johnson coming here a week ago. And now Boris Diaw, lose Trey Burke, lose Trevor Booker, and apparently keeping Shelvin Mack around, $2.4 million, especially in this day and age of the NBA, over the last week is nothing. So what do you think? We're a week, we're not even a week into it, but the Jazz appear to be pretty much done. What do you think about the efforts?
Yeah, I think that even if you go back a little bit before they made the trade for George Hill, just securing Quinn Snyder for the next 5 years, I think that was a good indication of what the Jazz intended to do this offseason. They want to win now, but they're also trying to continue building this future project. And so this offseason, I think, is on paper, what they've done is really encouraging for their immediate success and potentially could really help them in the long run as well for a couple of reasons. But here's what I like that they've done. They went through and they had some objectives going into the offseason, including getting more veteran leadership, more experience, being able to play different styles of basketball, being more diverse, having better shooting, et cetera, and having good mentors. And they've done that in every position group on the team. They've got a better point guard, an experienced point guard, with George Hill. They have a terrifically talented, albeit long in the tooth, wing in Joe Johnson, and now they just added another really good big man in Boris Diaw. So each position group is now deeper with experience, and I just think that really is a pretty smart and aggressive move by Dennis Lindsay to make those three moves.
Well, the three moves, smart and aggressive, I guess, but by what we've seen over the last 6 days, they were smart, but I don't think that they were even all that aggressive by NBA standards. What I like most, Jody, is you add a little bit of veteran leadership. Not one of those guys, with the exception of Hill, and neither Johnson or Diaw are going to be expected, at least initially, to play big roles. And what you've done is kept your salary cap intact because you know you've got big contracts looming in the next two cycles with guys like Gobert and Hayward, potentially Favors, in Hood down the line. You've got guys that you're going to have to take care of here, and you haven't spent ridiculous money. You've gotten guys that can fill small roles, but you haven't spent ridiculous money to do it.
Yeah, and that's where it comes into they've protected their future. And these guys, you know, potentially could really benefit. Trey Lyles can really benefit from the mentoring of Boris Diaw, and George Hill should really help Dante Exum. And you know, Rodney Hood, his childhood hero, is now on the team. That's pretty exciting. So there's a lot to be learned from those three guys. So they'll be, you know, they should be better in the future. And the Jazz, exactly what you said, they still have plenty of room in a couple of years. It's going to start next year with Gordon Hayward. He's going to be getting a max contract worth about $160 million or so. So Jazz fans might just want to start bracing for that. But I like that it gives them a much better chance to win this year as well. And the Jazz community, Jazz fans who've been mostly patient, but, you know, it's been a bit rough for the last 4 years, they should have high expectations. And, you know, this should be a fun year. And the expectations now are this is a – not just a playoff team, but this is a team that can win a playoff series or two now.
Jody Geddes, our Jazz insider with us here on the Bill Riley Show. What ultimately does Dennis Lindsay want from Boris Diaw? What's Diaw's day in and day out role going to be with this team?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think he's a completely different player than Trevor Booker, but I think he will fit that glue type player role where he's just going to be a good presence in the locker room and on the court. He's a terrific passer. I think he'll end up playing 15 to 20 minutes a night. He's mostly a power forward, but he can play, especially offensively, he can play center. He might have a struggle defending some of the bigger centers, but I can see him, if they decide to go small, he could be the center that they go with, you know, if they're playing some small ball. And he's a great passer. He's a good shooter. He can score. And just a good all-around basketball player. He's Quinn Snyder's type of guy. And he fit in perfectly, seamlessly with the Spurs team after he kind of flopped in Charlotte 4 years ago. And I think it was 3 years ago. And the Jazz expect him to mesh in just the same way here with them now.
Not just what the Jazz did, Jody, but seeing how kind of the rest of the West has kind of evolved and in some cases devolved with Oklahoma City. I don't think it's a stretch to say, and I threw a poll up yesterday and asked Jazz fans what they thought the ceiling for this Utah Jazz team could be next year. I think this team, if things click with this team right, because the second unit's much better now, I think this team could be a top four team in the West next year. What do you see as the ceiling for them?
That's exactly where I think. And I don't think that's a homer call either, because you're seeing a lot of national writers and media members and NBA experts are saying that too. I think they are. I think these moves have pushed them. I mean, it's hard to say a team that hasn't been in the playoffs for 4 years is suddenly going to be a number four seed, but I think that's what they've done, because they have a nice young core already, really good players, but now, like you said, they've got a really solid bench, and they can sustain an injury or two, where last year they couldn't. I mean, it was pretty remarkable that they finished 40-42, considering all the injuries. Now they have, and I talked to Rudy Gobert last night, and that's what he was most excited about, too. He said, now if we sustain an injury, we can still win. And, you know, they weren't able to do that before. And I think that does put them – I'm still – like, Portland is going to be good because they've got Damian Lillard, but who knows how Evan Turner is going to mix in with them. I think the Jazz have surpassed them. Minnesota has terrific, terrific young talent. But and I think they have a really bright future, but I think the Jazz are still a step ahead of them, if not two right now, with the mixture of young talent and experienced guys. So, yeah, I think that they should definitely be in that 4-5 range. And I expect them to be the Northwest Division front runners, honestly.
It was funny. Somebody tweeted that at me yesterday, and I said, wait a minute. Yeah, I mean, I don't know anybody right now. Oklahoma City's reeling. Here's the thing: Oklahoma City's still a good team, and they still have something the Jazz don't have, and that's a transcendent player. For the loss of Durant, and that's a huge loss, and I don't think they're a contender anymore in the West. But Russell Westbrook, I mean, he's a triple double machine, and he is an elite superstar the likes that the Jazz right now don't have. So, if the other pieces around him can step up a little bit, and I think Billy Donovan's a good coach, I still think Oklahoma City could be in that four. They're in that 4-5-6 discussion, but they're no longer, to me, a top three team. But to me, I kind of see the tiers. Golden State is head and shoulders better than everybody else. There's one, and then there's a big gap. Then I think San Antonio and the Clippers are in that 2-3 range, and then there's another little bit of a drop, and then 4, 5, and 6. Are Utah, Memphis, Oklahoma City. And then I kind of see about 4 or 5 teams, the Dallas, the Houston, the Portland, the Minnesota, kind of fighting it out for that 7 and 8 spot.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good breakdown. And I did omit Memphis. Memphis, they're an interesting team. They've made a couple of interesting moves this offseason as well. So they could be certainly in that mix for a 4 or 5 seed. I like the some of the moves that a couple of these teams have done, and I think the Jazz have made the best moves. Memphis is relying on a couple of guys who, you know, are injury prone, but and are paying a huge contract to a couple of them. But I think that it's interesting. You look at Mike Conley, who just got the biggest salary in the NBA, and I saw a per 36 comparison of him and George Hill. They're the same player. They have the same exact stats. It's pretty remarkable. That I think Conley is a better point guard than George Hill, but it's just interesting. I think that was kind of an underrated move by Dennis Lindsay to get a guy like George Hill for his system. So it'll be fun to watch that develop, though.
No, I totally agree. Memphis, I give a slight edge to their experience with the Conley and the Parsons and the Zebo and the Gasol. But they don't have really, to me, any margin for error. Their bench isn't very good. They're not very deep. And any one of those starters. And as much as I like Tony Allen, he's getting a little long in the tooth and he can't shoot. So for a two guard, he's not great. So there, to me, Memphis has really no margin for error. They've got a little more experience than the Jazz do. But to me, I'd probably give the Jazz the four spot right now and maybe Memphis the five, battling with Oklahoma City to see how that plays out.
Yeah, there are just so many different teams. It's going to be a deep West again, because you're going to have some teams like Minnesota with a new coach and a couple new great players, they're going to be a challenge for some teams to get by. So I think we're going to see 9, 10, 11 teams in the West who could be pretty dang good. But I thought it was interesting. I saw one writer today say that he picked Josh Eberle. He picked the Jazz to be the fourth seed and said that he believes that they're the best equipped team now to challenge Golden State just because of all the tools they have. So I thought that was an interesting observation. Rudy Gobert is going to struggle against Golden State just because of the way they're structured and their running gun type of offense. But, you throw a Boris Diaw in there and, maybe he can give them a different option, different look.
Real quick before I let you go, aside from Trey Lyles, who's been terrific, has anything else stood out to you at Summer League for the Jazz?
Yeah, not really. I mean, it's kind of an underwhelming roster, honestly. I thought it was fun yesterday, just from a local perspective, that we had a former Ute, Johnny Bryant, coaching, and three former college players who played in Utah. From Utah, Weber State, and Utah State, we're on the court at the same time. I still want to see more from Joel Ballenboy. I need to see him rebound more. I'm really hoping that he makes the roster. I think he could be a fun Jeremy Evans-type fan favorite. But funny enough, Olivier Hanlon, he's the guy that probably impressed me the most after Trey Lyles in that first game, and now he's a Spur.
San Antonio's very own Olivier Hanlon. Well, if they were getting rid of one international, they had to add another international in San Antonio. They couldn't just give up Boris Diaw and not bring some sort of an international back. So
they love their foreigners.
Yeah, they do. Hey, Jody, thanks for jumping on. We'll talk to you in a couple of days.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. He's our Jazz insider. You read him on the pages and click pages, the web pages of the Deseret News. Jody Genesee with us here on the Bill Riley Show on ESPN 700.